Hello and welcome to the Analytics Show, the podcast of business through the lens of data science. But together, we'll dive into learning and sharing where various industries are heading and how data and analytics is at the heart of shaping business growth and productivity. Let's spark different ways of thinking about data and analytics that is relevant to you and prepare your business for future disruption. I'm your host, Jason Tan. I'm delighted you could make it on this journey with us. Hey guys, to continue to get support tips, techniques, and tools, and learn from the expert, hit that subscribe button wherever you are so we can keep in touch and continue our lifelong learning together. So, are you using your company data to its full potential? Take our embedded analytic assessment, find out your score. A leading organization like Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, and Google have moved beyond dashboard and embedded data science directly into their daily business operation. With our 3-minute test, you will discover your potential in optimizing customer experience and revenue through embedded analytics. You will gain greater clarity, insight, and advice to embed analytics. Plus, you will receive customized results instantly. Find the link to this assessment in the description of this episode. Good afternoon, Ram. Thank you so much for dialing in all the way from the state to chat with me and come and join us at the Analytics Show podcast. I'm so excited to have you here. How are you doing?
Thank you, Jason. Likewise, the pleasure is mine. I appreciate the opportunity of speaking with you. I am great. Always good to talk to like-minded people. So even better that we're chatting, but thank you for asking. I'm doing great.
That is good to hear. I'm more excited than you are. I can assure you that we're going to chat about the data, the analytics, all those things that is in the media space. So it's something that I have been always fascinated. Now, I want to get things started with a little bit, few little things that I have found about you personally. The first of all is you won the Performance Pioneer Award with PMW US earlier this year. Congratulations. Can you tell us a little bit more about this award and what that means?
Sure. Happy to. Performance marketing worldwide, they basically look for people who are doing pioneering work, innovative work in the field of data and performance marketing. So I was excited, thrilled, and humbled at the same time when I received this accolade from them. But basically, the award entails, as I mentioned, in the world of performance marketing, there's a lot going on. People trying to get the best return for their investment. And that oftentimes goes into the realm of what more can you do that doesn't meet the eye? So that's where we start going, building innovative solutions in the world of performance marketing. And this this accolade considered the overall contribution to that field of performance marketing in terms of solutions, in terms of looking out for the interest of our clients and people who we work with, in terms of creating a culture where people want to belong and do this kind of work and can be motivated, and in trying to keep an eye out ahead of the rest of the world so that we're trying to make changes before they become major issues. These were the encompassing things that the judges shared were the criteria for that selection. So I appreciate you doing your homework, but I was very humbled to receive this. It's been a lifetime journey towards performance marketing, and I'm happy about that.
Wow. Can you tell us a little bit about the solution that apart from the culture, the team, you know, all those sort of things, can you tell us a little bit about that solution that seeded the award? I feel like that would be a good seeding about what we are going to chat later already.
No, I appreciate the question. I think, look, the solutions that I was talking about, they are all different in the sense that they are very specific to the channels and the application that they go on. Some examples would be when more and more publishers are offering solutions that are becoming black box in nature. In other words, where publisher solutions are working off of their own data set that is not always visible to the client. Clients would oftentimes come to us and say, hey, how do I know that this change is actually a change for the better? It is not going to disproportionately increase my cost or my CPCs while I still don't get the benefit of an equivalent increase in click share or return on that. So these are some examples that we would get from the clients. And so talking about the solutions, we went out and started to layer on different data-driven solutions on top of it, trying to understand how much each incremental movement on that channel raises the cost and increases the corresponding click share or revenue. And then when you start analyzing that, you start getting to the point of inflection. At what point does the cost become disproportionately higher than the return? My point in sharing all of that is to your question of what the solution was. This is one example of what we did, and we did it at scale. You're talking about trillions of computations being done in a matter of seconds. This is not something that you can do manually. This is not something that you will have access to when you're working with black box solutions provided by the publisher. So we put these kind of solutions in place so that the clients, our partners, had a better understanding of when they invest the next dollar, is it actually going towards an upward slope, AKA the return is profitable, or is it going towards a point where the diminishing return has been reached and the return is going to drop with further investment? These are the kind of solutions. There's a whole bunch of solutions. I can keep talking about them forever, but my point here is we build solutions with a purpose. And that purpose was what I was alluding to that went into the consideration of what makes a pioneer.
I feel like I can relate to some of those things that you talk about so much because of the black box and then how do you explain all those things. We'll go to the details about that in just a second, but let's share with the listener a little bit about who you are and where you do and what you do. So tell us a little bit about your current role as the Chief Performance Media Officer at Cross Media USA.
Thank you for the opportunity. Cross Media is the largest minority-owned independent global media agency, full service. My role here, as a full service media agency, we offer all solutions that I was earlier talking about, ranging from data and analytics to management of each of the channels, whether it's digital channels or offline channels, the complete end-to-end strategy and execution, and then overall measurement about it. Like, that's our whole remit, and we offer everything on that spectrum. For me particularly, I joined, as you mentioned, as the Chief Performance Media Officer with the remit of bringing media channels that are performance-oriented and building specialized data and analytics services. And collectively, this forms the basis of what our performance media function is. Channels that are oriented to deliver on performance. In fact, you could argue every channel is a performance channel, and I can elaborate on that in a second. But the combination of media channels coupled with advanced solutions that deliver high efficiency, high scale collectively to our clients, that's the function, and I lead that function at Cross Media.
I love it. Now, for the listener who let's take a step back. So for the listener who are not familiar with what the performance media is, can you quickly explain what performance media is and what is not performance media? Although, like you say, pretty much every media, every channel is a performance base already.
Certainly. So let's take a step back and go a little bit backwards in time. The classical definition of performance media started from channels. So when you were running paid search, or you were doing paid social, or you were doing search engine optimization, these channels tend to be places where people convert, right? These are the places where you actually either fill a form out or express your interest in a particular product or service or start engaging. These are what quote unquote used to be the lower funnel channels. Your definition of performance media started there. The first versions of those definitions relied on these channels being the definition of performance media. Since then, we have evolved. Those channels are still the demand capture channels. We look in the world of marketing, we talk about demand generation and demand capture. Those channels that I was talking about still, so search, social, organic, affiliate, these are all demand capture channels. Demand generation channels could be video, CTV, linear TV. These are all things that help people raise their hand, and the channels I was talking about help capture that demand. The performance media definition started with demand capture. Over the years, what has happened is we have evolved our solutions so that every channel has a benefit that it can deliver in the short term and a benefit that it can deliver in the long term. So the definition of performance media has evolved. It's now a combination of channels and very specialized services that bring the best out in that channel. If you have a demand generation channel and your outcome is to increase brand awareness or engagement, that could be the purpose, and the solution that maximizes that outcome becomes the performance solution that is associated with that channel. So in the current world, the definition of performance media, in my opinion, has evolved from lower funnel channels to a combination of channels and solutions that help maximize capturing the demand that your other marketing portfolio, the other side of the marketing portfolio, aka demand generation, is helping create. So you create demand, you capture demand, and all the vehicles you use to capture, we call it performance media.
That is a really great point. I'm glad that you highlight the overarching all of those things and how they're coming together. One thing that I personally feel and I'm really keen to hear what you are observing is that I think we were in the demand generation with the company. Mm-hmm. The video, the newspaper, all those right. things that were the increasing the awareness. And then when the digital came along, at one point, people very much shift along and then throw all the money into the digital, or at least people were looking at it as a two separate component where people are moving all the spending to the demand capture.
Correct.
But then ignoring the demand generation, but from right. it seems like people are starting to try to connect these two channels now, rather than thinking one or the one without the other. Yes. Yes. And is that what you are observing? How far do you think you think that people are starting to connect the two again, rather than treating that as a silo component?
Your observation is so astute and so correct. I think the point that you are making about these running in silo, that is what we used to do at all times, until we all started to realize that every penny that you're putting in the marketing portfolio can actually do both. It's hard to imagine, or it was hard to imagine 10 years ago, 7 years ago, but more and more people challenge that assumption. That is why we don't think of demand generation and demand capture as two separate initiatives. Rather, we go to market maintaining the balance between demand generation and capture. So think about it this way. If you're spending all your marketing dollars generating demand and you don't have enough dollars to spend on demand capture, that demand that you generated is wasted. There is no way to capture it. The opposite is also true. If you're taking all of the or a high part of your portfolio, higher proportion of the dollars of your marketing portfolio and putting it all in demand capture, you're only going to be able to capture that much of the demand that exists for your product and service. Because beyond that, all you're doing is increasing your cost. You're just bidding up the price for that product, because there is no incremental demand that is there. So your observation is absolutely correct. People started realizing it, that a whole index on demand generation or a whole index on demand capture doesn't work. In either of these situations, your overall return from a marketing portfolio is pretty poor. And so that is where a lot of performance marketers like us come in. That is where Cross Media comes in. Even though we are a full service agency, everything that we do goes with that balance in mind. What I'm talking about, that when I'm talking about that balance, we're constantly looking at, any performance marketer will tell you the same thing. We're constantly looking at how much demand every dollar generates and how many dollars is needed to capture that demand. Now you're talking, because now you have a total ecosystem that says, this is the total amount of marketing dollars I need. This is how much I can generate. Once you capture this, you go to the next stage, which is basically saying, I've done enough of this. I've made a profitable return on it. Let me reinvest that in market and expand my portfolio to capture incremental demand, generate incremental demand. This strategy, this approach is a constructive, recursive, upwards kind of approach. That is what marketers are seeing that they need to do. So to answer your question, more and more partners that we have are coming to us with that question. Tell me how to maintain that balance, because they have realized that if they index one side or the other, their marketing return isn't going to be there. So we are seeing quite a few people, if not a sizable part of the entire marketing industry, realizing that you need that balance. It's not going to be one or the other.
Now,
is that answering your question, Jason?
It does. And I'm going to go a little bit deeper and challenge on that. Is that from the data perspective, it's much, much easier to have the data showing the evidence of and the correlation from the data, from the demand capture perspective, because especially in the digital media area, where you have a dollar in, how many dollars come back? Mm-hmm. Data is able to support that. Whereas from the demand generation, and especially above the fold, especially the non-digital segment, is so hard to capture. So if we were to drill it down and go to just each of the individual, it's so easy for the senior manager who is responsible for the performance media, the data capture, to tell the boss to say, here is how much I have made. Look at that. The data is supporting.
Yep.
Whereas from the above the fold, the demand generation bit, it's going to be difficult for them to show the data to say, this is what the return is.
Correct.
To some extent, it creates an unbalance. So how do we deal with that sort of scenario then?
Your question supports the point that we were discussing earlier, why performance media is not just about channels, but it is also about the right solutions. So this is where the advanced analytical solutions come in. You're exactly right. It's very easy to say. Your question is very similar to a lot of people who rely on last click attribution, right? It's something similar in nature, because all you are able to do is take the place where you can assign the credit and give that credit. Mm. Unfortunately, what lands up happening in that example that you were saying is, because it's so easy to show the return, your natural instinct is, let's invest a little bit more here. Let's invest more here. And what lands up happening is, over a period of time, you've just not done anything so that more people raise their hand for your product. So that demand is shrinking. And with that shrinking demand, what you're doing is you're paying more and more and more and more to capture that. So over a period of time, you're increasing your own cash costs. So to your point, that same person, while it's easy to demonstrate that, think about it. That same person is also the one coming back 6 months later, a year later, saying, if I'm doing something so good, why is my cost increasing and why am I not able to grow the business, right? That's empirical evidence. Now, to answer your question from a data and analytics standpoint, One of the things that we do, any performance marketer will tell you the same thing, I've spent a lifetime doing this thing, is rely on the combination of deterministic measures and econometric modeling. So in our case, upper funnel channels, like you said, whether it's offline or online, things that cannot be directly connected with data, we do multiple things, right? We will do various forms of correlational or collinearity analysis. So you're trying to understand whether there is any tandem movement in exposure and action. We will do time staggered correlation. So what we'll do is we'll not only study the correlation between the data that the capture where it's happening and the exposure related data, we'll start time staggering it. So now you're trying to understand, is there a delay from when somebody saw an ad to the time when they took action? This is where things like ad stock come in, different kinds of measurements come in. This is also the basis for running different levels of attribution analysis, both ranging from probability-based attribution analysis to things that are more econometric in nature. My point here is, this is where you start using advanced measurement to try to create both the immediate and long-term impact and explain the impact. But it doesn't stop there. For us, that just is the first step to showing this is how an exposure that is not directly connected to a capture still helps the capture. That's step one. Simultaneously, what that does for us is it also creates an opportunity to validate that result. So that is why we now have a hypothesis to test in market. And the experimentation that we associate with that either prove or disprove that hypothesis that I'm picking up from econometric modeling. So my point here is, this is where you start using some advanced solutions using econometric modeling, and you overlay some form of a test and learn approach on top of it, so that not only do you have an explanation for how upper funnel is helping the lower funnel, you're also validating that and double checking just to make sure that you didn't pick up something in data that is not true. So that way you keep yourself honest. And by the way, going back to the original definition of performance media, because performance media focuses on delivering short-term and long-term lift, it's not like our answer is ever going to be spend this money and wait 6 months and see it will work. No, because there is a short-term component to it, you can still assign the credit to what you're seeing convert in markets. So to bring it all back, because I know I give you a very long answer on that, use a combination of deterministic and econometric methods to try to associate exactly what you were saying. We will overlay test and learn approaches on top of that to validate our hypothesis. And because we are maximizing short-term input, it makes our clients comfortable that it's not money that you have to spend and wait to see the result. The collection of these three things is how we're trying to approach it. But I have no doubt that practitioners all have different methods in doing it. This is just my point of view on how I approach that problem.
Absolutely. In terms of this advanced solution that you were describing, using the time staggering and using different metrics, the economic metric, etc., to layer the above the fold and the below the fold together, and the last click and those layers together, where are we at? Is it still something that the media house are doing it custom solution within the company, or are we seeing that there are this sort of solution coming out in the market off the shelf where people can easily connect the two things together?
Great question. Great question. I think it's a combination of both. It's specialized providers like us. So let me back up for a second. In order to do what I was describing, you can't do this with one person or two people or what have you, right? Absolutely. In order to build a solution like this, you need a data scientist. You need somebody who has a robust understanding of statistics or applied statistics. You need somebody who understands media data. You probably need somebody who can program, who can write SQL, who can work with structured and unstructured data. You probably need somebody who also can translate the business. My point here is, just building that one solution probably requires domain knowledge in 6-7 different things. This is where, and I've been on both sides. I have run marketing shops as a CMO for a long time, and now I sit on the service side. I have sat on both sides, a service provider as well as the client side, and I can say in my own experience, it becomes hard to build a large function like this when you're outside of the service vertical, because you really need to be a very large company to be able to invest, you know, dozens of people across seven different domains to build the solution. So that is where service providers like us come in, because we do this for multiple partners. So for us, it is relatively much more cost effective to build a practice like this and build a solution, because we're servicing multiple different partners. Absolutely. Now, the second part of your question was, are there other commercial providers? As machine learning and artificial intelligence is picking up in more and more applications, you are also seeing some platforms emerge. And platforms, they don't do the whole soup to nuts, because obviously there's a lot of custom work in here. But you are also seeing in the market certain specialized platforms emerge that do parts and pieces. So in that respect, our industry is moving in the right direction, because now all of a sudden, instead of everybody, even for a service provider like us, having to build everything from scratch, you can pick up solutions that are available in the market, and we can still do our job a little bit more efficiently. It's not yet that mainstream that it's plug and play, that clients can simply pick up and run with it, but it does make everybody else's job easier, because things that are modular in nature, you can now pick up in platforms that are commercially available.
Hey all, I just want to give a quick shout out about this episode. It's sponsored by the Embedded Analytic Program at DDA. And the Embedded Analytic Program is designed for senior manager and executive in the business team who want to integrate data science into daily business operation and use it to drive customer experience excellence and revenue. And book unlimited strategy session for a full year and start embedding analytics into the business frontline. For more information about this program, please refer to the description of this episode. Now, let's get on back to the interview. How far are we away from the day where you can easily plug and play to layer the two things together in your view?
Oh, that's a difficult question, Jason. I don't know if I'll give you a good answer to that. As somebody who has spent a lifetime doing this thing, I would like to think that that day is not far, but then the realistic part of me says we still have some ways to go. The only reason I say that is today we can process data and make intelligent decisions like the ones that I was talking about on a real-time basis, managing campaigns, managing channels. Like, you couldn't think of doing this 10 years ago. So we are definitely processing data with an application mindset, and we're doing it at scale much faster. So that part makes me happy, because we have really evolved. The part that I think still needs to be done is decision intelligence. Decision intelligence is still in its very, very nascent stage. Even though we talk about AI and ML, and oftentimes these things are just talked about at a high level, the decision intelligence that comes, that goes into making a decision on when to turn a campaign on, how much to throttle, how to account for exogenous factors. The amount of inputs that we take in before making a decision is quite large, and it's not defined. It's not a structured data set. It's not a button that you can press saying, subscribe to this data and it'll tell you all the signals around you. No, that doesn't exist. So the reason I say it is still decision intelligence is still a little bit away is because all the inputs that are required for decision intelligence are still completely unstructured. There is no structured way of getting all the inputs. So it might be a little ways before a full plug and play automation comes about. That being said, we are using plug and play of parts to make our jobs easier. That is happening today. A full-scale plug-and-play, maybe not there yet.
One thing that I'm going to off the drill for a second. One thing that I find challenging for the marketer is, to certain extent, especially, I think your view is going to be so solid on this, is that the role and the understanding and the skill set of a marketer have broaden.
Yes.
I was thinking about using the word shifted, but I don't think shifted is the right word. But I have been broadened so much. I think I would imagine that 10, 20 years ago, someone who's starting the marketing is talking about is more about focusing on the creativity, how to deal, how to buy the media, and the advertising world. Whereas today's, on top of all of those things, you still need to be hands-on and understanding about the technical. And with the channel are expanding so much, is that the new grad have to learn a thousand things.
Absolutely right. 100% agree with you. I agree with you completely.
In that case, how do you feel like the university or maybe the on the job training or even from the performance review perspective is going to equip all of these new professional coming into the field to be able to amass all of those different skill set in multiple spectrum?
That is a great question. I'll tell you what, I don't know if I have a general answer. I'll share with you my experience on this.
Please.
Yeah. Your question is so astute. I completely agree with you that the breadth of skills that you need is pretty high. And by the way, it's not just the breadth of skills. You are also expected to know those skills deep, vertically. You need to have a lot of deep exposure, and the number of topics on which you need to have that expertise is pretty high. So in our experience, what we land up doing is, there's a couple of ways. Some people will say, let me go search for that unicorn who knows five things and they know five things all equally well. I have followed a little bit of a different journey. I don't know if I'll be very successful searching for those unicorns. So what we land up doing, Jason, is we create rotation programs within our departments, within our remit. So for example, in the world of analytics, you may start as a data scientist. That is your deep expertise. But when you start there, over a period of time, you have the opportunity to work with people who are programmers, to people who are statistician, people who are database administrators and are working with different other topics, people who are media managers. So they are working in the platform and seeing how the application of the solution goes towards optimizing performance. So one of the things that I've tried to do in all my career is create an opportunity for rotation within my team members. As I was describing earlier, in order to build these solutions, you need specialized skill sets across multiple different domains. And so I do go out and look for very specialized resources because that's what our jobs depend on. But then when they start as a part of the team, I specifically have created programs that have allowed people to interact with each other and build on skills from learn from each other. That expands your horizon. You're still not expected to know seven different things at the same level of depth, but you know a couple of things that are really deep, and you start to know the other things that you need to know. And all of a sudden, you start to see the application. You start to see the use of what that knowledge brings to you. And then when you have to go build it, you still go and pick up the different specialists who can help build it. But all of a sudden, you've taken your own knowledge. You've taken the knowledge that you've gotten from the colleagues that you're working with. And you're starting to think, how can I build a solution that addresses beyond just the knowledge you have? So I have used rotation program as one way of trying to enrich learnings across the different spectrum, because I've not been very successful in finding people who know everything.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, coming back to the main cause, share with us use cases where branding and performance media are used to improve for the organization or the client, and then you layer the data and the analytic solution on the top to further pushing it beyond what it can achieve for the client.
Perfect. I think this connects very well to a discussion we were having earlier when I said we think all channels can be performance channels, right? All all channels are performance channels. And the reason I say that is in this question that you were asking, let's just say there's a branding channel and there is a demand capture channel. So just keep it very specific. One performance channel, one branding channel, right? Mm. Gone are the days where somebody will say, I am going to take X amount, X million dollars and put it in a branding channel. And I'm going to just measure top two box brand awareness through a survey. And that's going to be done. And the other person says, I'm going to take X million dollars and I'm going to spend it on paid search. And we'll just call it the performance of paid search. Those days are gone. Today, the branding dollars, they have a primary objective and they have a secondary objective and they have a tertiary objective. So the same guy who's spending the branding dollars is saying, I want my brand awareness to go up. But I also want to understand how many conversions I'm getting by putting this brand dollars in market, AKA the word conversion was never in that paradigm before, but conversion has now become a second dimension to that. Similarly, for the performance guy in the room, earlier, it was all about, okay, let me just run paid search. Now, all of a sudden, the question becomes, well, paid search can only capture so much as the demand exists. Is paid search actually helping generate interest? Particularly, let's say, Jason, you want to buy a product. You don't know the name of the product. You start exploring about that product. Well, you could argue that when you're exploring and the right ad appears in front of you, you are generating some demand. You start with looking for shoes. You don't have Nike in my mind. You don't have Adidas in mind. You're just looking for a shoe. And then if I am the brand and I am putting the right message in front of you, you can say that even though I'm running this on paid search, I am doing a work of what a branding channel could be. So even this person's secondary objective becomes, am I doing anything to raise awareness? In this example, you just saw me narrate two different channels who had primary objective and secondary objective. So in situations like this, Jason, what we have done is we've built solutions called blended KPI, imputed KPI. And what we land up doing is we take multiple different outcomes that a marketer desires from their spend, and we generate an imputed score. And then we measure the different performance metrics against that blended KPI instead of just awareness or just conversion. That starts to give me an idea of how much your marketing campaign is doing to drive both outcomes together. I'm still responsible for my primary outcome, but now I have a dimension to understand what is it's doing to drive both outcomes. Solutions like this, Jason, are allowing us to make every channel into a performance channel. Because if I have a solution like this, I can go back and say, even though your main purpose was branding, every dollar that you spend branding, 5 cents of that dollar helped generate a conversion. And so now I have sharpened the focus of that channel, which is why I say every channel can be a performance channel with the right solution. If you didn't have this solution in place, you'd only be looking at the main metric there. But when I add this kind of an example to the mix, all of a sudden you can look at a performance angle, even though the channel is a non-performance channel. Does that make sense?
It does. I think what it got me curious to know then is, how do you calculate these blended KPI or the score that you were using? Can you give us a few metrics where we can start visualizing
what? Sure. Like? Sure. So we use different algorithmic ways of combining them. It could be done using factor analyses. It could be done using regressions. It could be done using clustering mechanism. But the KPIs that I'm talking about, for example, could be on the web front. It could be web KPIs like bounce rates, like traffic. On the paid side, it could be things like cost, clicks, conversions. On the engagement side, it could be impressions on a social channel, retweets, engagement metrics. All of these become different KPIs, different factors that we run different models against to understand which combination of these factors maximizes outcome A, AKA conversion rate, or outcome B, AKA engagement. And we use this model that I was describing, multiple different ways of doing it, to then compute the score that becomes the guiding factor. that's how we do it. And I was trying to give you some examples of different channels, because these KPIs, otherwise, if you're not looking at a blended KPI, you're going to be looking at web and traffic metrics separately. You're going to be looking at paid channel metrics separately. You're going to be looking at engagement metrics separately. But by putting them all together and trying to understand a model that explains how much of these contribute towards a conversion rate or an engagement or a different action, I now have an understanding of what combination of these can be applied to run a factor. That's what I'm calling blended KPI.
Gotcha. I feel like I could see almost the equation in my head now, where you have this, you have this side of the equation, which is about all the demand generation. You have this side of the equation where it's about all the conversion, and then
correct
that in. But I think before you blend that in, what I was thinking equally is that from both sides, because every organization is different, then they one would may have, step one is have someone to collect the data from all the different channels from both sides and then bring them together. But equally, that need to be someone who is experienced enough to say, okay, our organization is different, and what proportion we should be assigning for these different channels, how much weight we should give to them. And then once you have done for the both sides, and then you put two of the layers in to see how those things are
coming
out to come out that final score.
Correct. And we use different models to assign that weight to each of those factors that you were just talking about. That's where a lot of modeling comes in.
Yeah. How much of the mathematician are involved in your experience? How much of the mathematician, how much of the people who have that sort of skills that are required for your organization like yours, who as a service provider, in order to build all these sort of solutions to for the client?
You know, I get that question quite a bit, and I think there's a reason for it. No, really, there's a reason for that. You'll be surprised. I think more often than not, so oftentimes you would think that you would require a massive amount of investment in data science to do these kind of things. In my experience, that has not been the case. What is really needed? So remember when I was describing, I have different team members with different specialized skills who make this happen. None of them over-index on the data science or statistics part. The idea here is not, the solution is not built by statisticians altogether. So what I'm trying to say is, the investment is in the right combination of skills. So to answer your question, mathematics is involved, but is it the only component? Absolutely not. That is where knowledge of data comes in. That is where knowledge of SQL comes in. That is where knowledge of programming comes in. That is where knowledge of media comes in. So in my experience, what has worked successfully is understanding what are all the different skill sets that are needed to make a practical solution. The keyword there being practical. We're not building it because we're teaching in a university. We're building it because somebody requires this to maximize their return, right? They're running a company on it. So the practical application comes from using a combination. For me, I have never found that it requires over-indexing on the part of data science. It does require you to have the right members on the team, because a data science without the context of business, or a business person without the context of the model, in either of those situations, the solution doesn't exist.
That makes sense. Now that we understand how the data, how the analytics are playing the role in the work of the performance media and the branding, the world that you are in, let's flip the other side of the coin. What are the challenges that come with using data and analytics to transform, to track all of this performance?
That's such a good question. I'm sure everybody who's in my seat will probably give you like lots of answers on that. But I'll give you a few big ones.
Yes. Please.
Bringing together different forms of data still continues to be a little bit of a challenge. Not every partner that we have operates the same way. Organizations are set up differently. In some organizations, Data is readily available across multiple different departments and different teams. In some cases, it is not the case. Mm. In some organizations, the data is closely guarded. For any of these solutions to be successful, you need different domain data, different domain data pieces. You can't just build this off of one data source. So in my opinion, the first thing that comes to mind is access to multiple types of data that resides in an organization. Without going too much off on a tangent, this is also one of the reasons why you're seeing a lot of talk in the industry around things like data fabric and data mesh, because people are trying to bring the different disparate sources of data sitting across their organization in one place, either directly or accessible through a map, so that they can run these analyses. So access to data continues to be a big one. And then access to the right skill set of talent. I can't emphasize that enough. If you go out and try to build a solution just using one domain expert in there, chances are that that solution is not going to take off, because you need multiple skill sets to build a successful solution. So my top two would be access to data and access to the breadth of the knowledge base that you have, aka breadth of skill set. Those would be the two big ones for me.
Mm. Now, all of these things that we have discussed so far, they are really accessible by the big organization, the Fortune 500, the ASX 200. How can a small business potentially benefit from this thing? Obviously, they're not going to spend millions of dollars like the big organization, Correct. Where can they start and what they can do to stand a chance to fight and work their way out to become the big organization one day?
No, that's such a good question. I think this is where, and I say this very humbly and very neutrally, this is where using a service provider as a resource comes in and becomes very helpful. If you try to do it all within the same organization, not everybody is a Procter & Gamble, right? Not everybody can have the level of investment that is needed to build everything themselves. And I'm not saying that they're doing that. My point here is your observation is correct that not everybody has the investment to do that. But this is where service providers come in really handy, because I think the model in which service providers work is they're building these solutions out and servicing multiple partners, so you do not have to bear the full load of the cost and resources involved in building a solution. So that's first thing that I would encourage. The second thing that I also encourage your audience and people who I work with and who know to really think about is understand the maturity of data in your own organization. You can use commercial maturity models, you can use your own, but unless you understand what is the maturity of the day of data in your own organization, it'll be hard for you to undertake that, regardless of your size. You could be a small, I have seen enough big companies who have very low data maturity and they take on projects and they're not successful. So to answer your question, understand the maturity of the organization. That is not a function of big or small. And then if you are a small organization who doesn't have all the resources, I would highly encourage looking at service providers, because they can probably provide you a cost-effective way of doing this. Last but not the least, you have to build a recursive model. So if you're a small organization, you have to choose wisely on those solutions that will help you grow the business so you can reinvest the business and become that big organization at a point. Because there's also the thing of like, there's so many shiny objects, and oftentimes we'll see people invest millions of dollars in that one thing without necessarily doing the diligence and saying, am I choosing the right portfolio that will help grow the business? So you have to be a little careful in your choices, but service providers can help.
Absolutely. Now that you have been on the both sides of the world, being a service provider and also equally working in an organization as a CMO, have you got a side that you want to pick?
Oh, that's a lovely question. At this point in time, I'm loving the service side because I've loved both. I've gone the full circle. Started on the services side, went on the client side, and now came back to the services side. I've gone the full circle, and I've loved both. The service side allows me to be on my toes at all times, constantly building new things, constantly challenged by new things. The client side allowed me to really get deep on the things I was doing. So a lot of my domain knowledge came from being on the client side. So there's benefits of being on both sides. I'm enjoying where I am right now. That being said, I owe a lot of who I am to my experience of 15 plus years on the client side. I learned so much, which now as a service provider is helping me take back to the people who are my colleagues, because I can empathize with the problems they are running into. I can understand the questions that their board of directors is asking them, because trust me, I was myself there standing in front of board of directors answering that question. So it's helped me learn a lot.
Wonderful. Can I give you a plug or about your work or your company? Anything else that you'd like to share about?
No, I think you've given me a lot of opportunities to mention that along the way. Like I said, my only point on that would be, I learned it by being on the client side and coming back on the service side, that there are people who are dedicated to building these solutions, and cross media is no different. So that is why we are a global agency. We can provide all these services. My point in bringing that up is, agencies like Cross Media exist for the reason of providing these services. I've used all my learning from the client days to my current job, and I encourage everybody who's looking to take that next step in marketing maturity to really take a look at what service providers can bring to the table, because we wouldn't be a service provider if we were not being challenged with new things to solve for every day. So that's all I will say, but I appreciate the opportunity.
So being a global agency, which are the country that you have the big presence for your organization?
So we support clients across the globe. We have a huge presence in Europe, and we have a huge presence here in the US.
Right. Okay, cool. Now, here are my final two questions.
No, please.
To close this interview. The first one is, what is your most important first principle?
Very good question. So for me, because I strongly believe, data analytics and performance is a team sport. You need to be a team player in order to do that. It is not, as we were discussing, we've spent so much time, it's not a one-person job. So for me, the most important principle is empathy, because that is how you build a strong team. I've always built strong teams using empathy, being able to work well with each other, understand each other. So for me, hands down, being empathetic is the first principle. An empathetic person obviously always challenges himself and improve, because they have the knowledge and ability to see where I can improve. They also have the knowledge and ability to see what the rest of the world needs. They can empathize with other people's needs. So your solutions are going to be that much better because you're relating to the problem that the partner is telling you. So for me, hands down, empathy.
What is one book that you have read and thought it would have been better for your younger self to have?
Five Dysfunctions of a Team by Patrick Lencioni. I read that book much later in life, but the values that I picked up from that book, I use it every single day in the way I run my business, in the way I create teams. But hands down for me, the best book that taught me, there's so many good books, but the one that I will never forget, and I learned so much from, Five Dysfunctions of a Team. So
nice one. I would have to check that one out. Now, thank you so much, Rem, for sharing this discussion about the data analytic using the world of the media, but even more importantly is that bringing that whole idea and that concept to the forefront, why the two different worlds should no longer be siloed and how they are interconnected, and even more so there are people out there who try to build a solution to bring the two worlds together for the demand generation and the demand capture. That has been a wonderful, wonderful discussion.
I appreciate the opportunity. You gave me a chance to express my passion. I thank you for that.
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello. If you enjoyed this conversation, hit that subscribe button so we can meet again. If you don't, I'll be stuck in an infinite loop. So pull that plug by clicking the subscribe and help me out. You can further support us by leaving us a kind review from wherever you are listening. At the end of the year, I will choose a reviewer to send a special gift to, and it might just be you. Look forward to seeing you here next week for a new adventure. If I can find my way out of this endless loop. See ya. Thank you.